Hi, and welcome to Prosody, 90.5 FM's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Renee Alberts, guest host of Prosody, and my guest is the poet M. Callen. M. Callen is a multidisciplinary artist and poet from Pittsburgh. Her work has appeared in Fence, Gigantic, The Atlas Review, The New Guard, and other publications. She is the recipient of fellowships from the Atlantic Center for the Arts and the Bucknell Seminar for Younger Poets. Her website is m-callen.com. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Can you start us off with some poems?
Sure. I'm going to start with one that I usually start with. It's an oldie but a goodie. It's called Middletown, Kentucky. Light moved the way you would expect it to. Dogs chased after beer cans. Deer committed suicide on the sides of pickup trucks. In the yellow light of a dirt-brown bar, a girl unstitched her gums in the corner. Another made the sign of the cross. Two animals clamored in their apartment, and a question was asked about love. The girl was bleeding unbelievably. She held out a hand of birdseed and said, "Come here. Let me show you all of the awful things I can do with my mouth." This next one is called History of Romance. Dressed all up in lightning, my hair teased to the 10th degree, I was wanting to be wanted. A sweet talker at twilight tried to memorize my life, rehearsed all the dances, knew the songs on the radio. In a room of pig straw huts, in an ever-trembling tundra, I am not beyond suggestion, working for the man's gut. My lover struck out and said, "Humble," produced his stash of saris, his dealer's snake around my neck. And I was sleeping when they stole me, put a stop between my teeth. I was the outrage of cocooning, the resignation of an old man's lie. Saw the moon but wanted thunder, an electrician to fix the vacancy sign. I was a mother for a moment. I had two children not to speak to. Their faces swore silence into mine. This next one is a longer poem that comes in five parts, and I'm just going to pause between them instead of reading you numbers. It's called Age of Consent. I am in the street with a busted fuel pump covered in gasoline. I am covered in gasoline, smoking a Marlboro that I lifted off my man. I am all about this fire. I show everyone all at once, stubbing the cigarette out on my arm. And if I am on fire, then he is in the crowd where no one is claiming to have known me. And if I am not on fire, then he is in the orchard where everyone is claiming to have been me. I am raining now upon myself in hopes they will disperse, in hopes he will suffer more to have less of me. Production of yearning, I mean to say, explaining the smaller consequences of sawhorses and dumb fruit. "It's what we're building here that matters," he says, putting his lunch down on my back. "Here is my hammer, and here is my saw, and here is my mother's portrait, and here is my first unborn. We have the whole household to consider," I remind him, plucking the backs of my teeth for musical accompaniment. The holder of houses, I think, is a very important job. What happened to the dream before we met? The dream of full crowds and full envelopes, of his teenage bedroom, where I am 4 of 8 lumbering limbs faulting that whatever semblance of self. We're underneath the 40th Street Bridge, and he's more hum than man. Underneath the 40th Street Bridge, and I'm more want than woman. Watching the cars strike like matches across the span, we keep together, tight as jars, screwed into each other. I am flipping the record back to the A side. There is the degree to which he believes age is unwarranted, to say nothing of time's failure to accurately describe and evenly distribute itself. Example 1, senescence versus chronological decrease in mortality. Example 2, gene expression, biological cause versus Maybelline. Example 3, progeroid syndromes versus gerontology. Example 4, me versus him. So I made him into the painting with the balaclava face. So I made his name into a memorial for someone else. I know what I am, I tell the heckler at the all-night diner. I know what I am, I tell the woman in the laundromat who won't stop hurting herself. I know what he is, I tell no one in particular, while ascending again the hill. It's the season of nothing to be done, the windows shut to prove the weather's claims. He's in the kitchen again, making not a sandwich, and I am inside his hands, holding no one.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Renee Alberts, and my guest is the poet M. Callen. So something that stands out in your poems is some really surprising word choice and imagery. Things like dressed all up in lightning, the cars strike like matches across the span when you're talking about the cars going across the bridge, and things like his dealer's snake around my neck, like just these images that stand out very strongly. Can you talk about how you write and how you choose that sort of thing for your poems? How do your poems start? Do you start with like a free writing thing from experience and then edit down from there? Or do you collect images and then sort of compile them into work?
I think in the past I've worked both ways in terms of using notebooks to compile the odds and ends that pop into the brain, as well as journaling. And I think what I try to do is braid invented narrative forms along with biographical information, trying to create sort of another world where something magical is often happening, but in a way that passes without much notice. I like to think of it as more of a quiet sleight of hand than a sodden half assistant. I think it's just some way of trying to bring lightness to the gravity of the world and a little bit of grace.
I definitely hear that in your work, that sleight of handness and that, like, the magical kind of slipping in. And I also hear a lot of observation. There's almost a sort of removal of the speaker in some of the poems, and it gives this sense of otherness to that voice. And that voice, I think, seems to allow for things like these magical associations that the language is making, but it also makes for this sense of removal where there's this observation happening from an outsider's point of view onto the world, which seems to leave room for that kind of thing too. Is that an intentional move on your part to have this very observational stance?
I think I do prefer the observational stance. I mean, I use the first person still in a lot of my poems, but there's only so far that can really carry you before it gets kind of redundant and boring, for lack of a better term.
Okay. Can you read us some more poems?
Sure.
Thanks.
Parlor Tricks with Ed Steck. I waved my arm to signal, ta-da, but no smoke and no song were revealed. A hand reached out in place of the absurd, the slit in the green velvet curtain. The way the color red made its exit, or is simply invisible now. This winter made of whiskey, this cabin full of limbs. Put all these antiques on eBay. Somebody get us out of here. No love like night. Besieged by the tiny arias at play in my ear, I don't want a stomach of inventory, fistful of history. I was promised we would only go there once, and am thus beholden to a wraith I love more than Abraham, and for whom I dedicate this song in B flat minor, the only key I have, the only swell I can show, beginning in the diaphragm, rushing through my teeth, lapping onto your lips, as if they could be some great jetty of reason, spitting back the words we mean to ask each time our mouths are agape. Or have all the men who know better than to shame begging evaporated from their man-faced wax molds? I need a good light, a better love. I have polished my lady shoes that clack clack on parquet, that shuffle the darkness into roulette, that never sleep. I was trying to say that night is only wind. I was trying to let that pass for goodbye. I was reading the braille of bites on my bones and the cartography of bruises that don't disappear. Weighing the wooden handle and crooked saw teeth hinged above my goose flesh in receding water, watching my body return its shape in the bathtub, its perfect weight. But I am not ready to be evicted by the night and sent into nothing, already a refugee of respectable hours, banished even from late twilight-tinged thunder and the wind which rips our telephone wires mid-mention. And if I am worried we have lost all respectable sense of communication, then why am I shouting like a bear has devoured my darling? Is a good question. I am tired of listening to your well-imagined world, the one with the postbox in every sink drain, and every morning a fresh taxidermy to project upon, to pull teeth from. I don't want to stand outside the sure save while you screech donuts around my corpse. So what if I am a body? Good, better, best made for eating all the cantaloupe on the 4th of July. Why don't you lie down here beside my assortment of scarred skin? Run your finger over this nightgown, hemmed with the soft script of a hymnal, and soon you can become again a song. Come back to the living and ask me who I love. I'm crying, no one, no one, no one. Cover. A woman underwater, a string of bees that cross the road like waddling geese, 10-ton hot air balloon, nocturne as an uncle to singing the blues, Friedrich freaking Chopin. The man who said, you are like a leather tool belt in the morning, and the other like a windmill in the lower left corner of his heart. The one who regularly arrived to waltz in your dreams, and who often felt most unlike a dream. Firmly starched collar, cummerbund turned up, razor blade against your husband's ebbing Adam's apple. White cell count, silver lining. The bites on your body, just holes to dig in. Keep moving, people. There's nothing to see here.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Renee Alberts, and my guest is the poet M. Callan. So there's a strong presence of listing as a technique in your poem. We hear in your poems, we hear the list that starts with "Here is my hammer," and then "Here is," and it goes on. The beginning of that of cover that you just read has a list of images in it, images or details. There's also a lot of parallel structure. I was trying to do this. I was trying to do this. Can you talk about that element of your work or of how you see structure?
I think there's a lot of people that would say that structure is essentially what holds the poem together. And I think that while that's true, I think the way that you approach it is really what makes the poem stand out. I think in respect to my inclination toward listing actions and objects and images, I think it's a way of building momentum in a poem while keeping it very close to the heart.
And I think sometimes what that momentum builds towards is some of these really powerful standout, just flat, plain statements. Things like, "I know what I am," or "Come back to the living and ask me who I love." Moments like, "I am not beyond suggestion." And then also, it gives, those moments serve almost as a place of pause or like a real energetic arrival in the poems. And they also seem related to what the poem is after. So do you see those techniques as in tandem? They also have kind of a conversational quality that's in contrast to the sort of more lyrical, sometimes more wild or more magical sounding listing that happens with those associations of details.
I think that in general, I guess I mostly see my practice as a sort of series of attempts to make sense of the ineffable and the inexorable business of living. And I think that being in conversation with myself, but by proxy, the reader, kind of helps to relate the poem into the reader's life and sort of share the experience of that attempt to make sense of something. I feel like there's something very basic that we're always trying to get to as writers and as artists and as musicians. And although sometimes I think that maybe music comes closest to it because it's beyond words, I think that the efforts that we make to get to this very essential part of being. I always go back to this David Berman quote from Actual Air in his poem Self-Portrait of 28, where he says, "I'm trying to get at something so simple that I have to speak plainly so that the words don't disfigure it. And if it turns out that what I say is untrue, then at least let it be harmless, like a leaky boat in the reeds that is bothering no one."
Wow, so that makes sense, looking at your work and hearing those, you know, these collections of fragments of narrative around, that kind of talk around moments, talk around experience, and then come through with these more emotive, these powerful statements. Can you read us some more?
Absolutely. This poem is called Lucifer, the ghosts repent. Here on the anniversary of nothing being enough, we run around collecting the clothing of the damned, dragging their bodies around on bedsheets white enough to reconsider the idea of every ghost, arriving at some impasse where Lucifer, chained to the dirt, does his bidding, then slips away like a lover before the crest of dawn. How soon, how slowly, can we ask the light to wash us, to let us forget the river's temper, taste water instead of fire, now that we are drowned? A people, out of time, into eternity, our loneliness no longer waiting to be repaired. No new shirt and no new shoes, because these are the concerns of the living. All we ask, now darkness has made us into something else, may we at least be made to exist again. I'm going to read two poems that were written after the passing of my father, which of course made me write a whole handful of poems, but there's only so much people want to hear your dead dad's stories. This one's called The Possible Life. Someone is making casserole. Someone is swearing with all their breath the prayer of the word irreparable, and later, inconsolable. And there's the term necessary, which he was, and something about tenderness or forgiveness, but no, they don't go hand in hand. There is the clacking of brass handles when I close the dresser drawer, keys collapsing on the foyer table, the shuffle of his shoes. There is the trail of coffee that followed him out the door, that we thought could lead him home. A 62 Triumph in a garage we can't find. An office made of cigarette smoke and broken fax machines. A secret storage space where we find the rocking chair and the box of photographs and the possible life. No, no monsoon. Now that we've arrived at midnight, the trailer is filled with a bright, warm glow. All the nurses are done up in their party dresses, so happy to see us, though I couldn't tell you the name of a single one. They turn their backs from the table of sponge cake and gesture for a dance that will never end. We finally made it to this little island, and I want you to know how nice it's been to walk with you this evening. I must excuse myself now and step outside where there are paper lanterns and the sound of waves, strange contraptions of wood and rope embellishing the shoreline. It's time we both go home. You are so tired, but the nurses will keep you dancing. Soon you will forget you brought your body here, and then you will go on and leave it. In lighter news, this poem is called Two Roads Diverge at a Carnival. This one goes out to the widows in white blouses, their fashion following a dream of redemption, of resurrection, of just a small toll booth back into the world of the living. The sun is drying up and the day is all burnished copper. Everyone keeps their footwear at bay, skin smelling like $5 in a diner. But their mouths, full of too many teeth and no more chew. Here's to the handkerchief, son of bedsheets. Here's to baked pasta, the buffet of funerals. What more can we find here? A going round ride, a golden calf. The world sung of is the one sung for. I have come to give my grand address, but I have nothing more to say. Dead history. I am still all glory and bad ideas, the more distant from the world now, huddled somewhere in Homewood where no one could find me if they tried. I am still a peach, somebody's huckleberry, wrapped in a world too dumb to confess its wrongs. Sometimes I sell ads and think of you. Believe me, everyone has left, and L makes a bacon sandwich, and Q washes his hair, and what can I do but kiss them? Again, and never for good this time, my arms still covered in dirt from the day's repairs. Who am I to say? Somewhere there is wrestling, two ladies poised to bare their arms and legs and hold or push or writhe one way or another. What do I have to say? I am lonely. I got very old, very suddenly, and everything became a pale mulch from which I cannot pull my feet. Oh, my 21st century stupidity, my too much mouth in the way. So what if I'm drunk and on course for yet another mistake? Above all else, isn't this what you wanted? A radio, an idiot cloud? You who prefer running in terms of circles, on repeat, a jogging suite. Let's talk about a ballpark of cement trucks, which is not unheard of. It's in choir with the graveyards of old cars, some matched perfect to their skin of weeds. I am asking for once a letter, tall and oblique, lifted above my head for all to see. A letter that does not exist. The one to tell you, I have found the night and it refuses to speak for itself. Baby, there is much explaining to do. Affinity for drowning. I have tried to be clear about my intentions toward the moon. And I want to believe that this world is full of darker things than these bad ideas. Lord, I am no song in the morning star, nor the slope of the sky broken off into evening. I am the wind swept into the last hour, this river run into.
The poetry of M. Callan. Thank you so much for sharing your work today.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Prosody, a weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a bi-weekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the arts entertainment news weekly published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in at our new time, Saturday mornings at 6:30, for Prosody 90.5 FM.